Okay, welcome again to Your Money and Your Mindset. I am your host, Lo Wai Tan, and as usual, I bring you interesting and fascinating guests to talk about money, health, wealth. It's all together in one. It's not just about the money in the bank, it's total wealth. And today we're going to concentrate on the money aspect in terms of businesses. So you people out there who own businesses or run businesses, or you have employees beside yourself, as most people do, there is a very large percentage of businesses or small or medium sized enterprises which have less than maybe 10 to 15 employees are basically the backbone and the mainstay of most economies, and certainly it is here in Australia. Now, as a business owner, you know that your people, good people, precede profits. So basically it's a case of making sure you pick the right person for the right job. And any organization will only function like an well-oiled machine if you have the right people. Don't you agree? Now, it sounds very logical, but the stats lately just are very surprising, in the sense that they say, in the US anyway, the Department of Labor, there was a survey where it said 50% of all employees will leave their job within the first 6 months of being hired, which is not very good in terms of longevity. Once you've trained a person, they decide they don't want to stay and they go. It's costly in so many ways, right? And Ride Management apparently had a new survey recently, and here are the stats. It says 86% of employees polled said they plan to actively look for new positions in 2013. So we're talking about employee retention. People stay because they like you and they like the job, and whatever they're doing is fulfilling. So my guest here, a very special guest today, is Beverly Flaxington. Now, she is a certified professional behavioral analyst, because it's all about behaviors, right? She's also a career and business advisor. She's written lots of books on business and financial books, like the award-winning Understanding Other People, The 5 Secrets to Human Behavior, and we're going to be delving into her latest book, Make Your Shift, The 5 Most Powerful Moves You Can Make to Get to Where You Want to Go. So welcome, Beverly. How are you?
I'm doing great. Very happy to be here tonight.
Okay, we're very excited. So let's get straight into this aspect. But my viewers want to know something about you first. So can you just give us an idea of who Beverly is?
Sure. Well, I did spend a lot of my career in the corporate realm, and I worked for a large insurance company and went up the ladder to running large groups of people, hundreds of people. I ended up working for an individual that I did not feel was ethical. I questioned a lot of the decisions that were being made, and so I decided at that point to leave my corporate job and start my own business. So for the last many, many years, I've run my own consulting business, sales and marketing consulting, but we do business building, we do executive coaching, we do training. And alongside that, I went back to school in the sense that I became a college professor. So I teach 3 classes now. I have over 200 students. And then in my free time, I write books and and raise my children.
Okay, all in a very casual manner, of course. That's not okay. That was interesting. Now, we're going to talk about, really, in that sense, this book and the fact that if 86% of employees are saying we're going to be looking for a new position, and we're talking about this time in the economic cycle where it is still precarious. Some people would be hanging on to their jobs, but the survey says that, in fact, there are people who are willing to throw caution to the wind, so to speak, because they are dissatisfied with their current work situation. And you're the troubleshooter who comes in and fixes things, yeah?
Yes, and I think, you know, when you opened, I have to say, I think you keyed on something that is missed oftentimes in businesses, large and small, and that is that relationships in business and treating people well and knowing how to manage effectively, knowing how to lead, these are economic issues. So people can look at it and say, oh, we need to be nice to our employees, we have to treat our employees well, et cetera, et cetera. But this is economic. If you don't do it, if you don't learn how to hire the right people, motivate them, lead them, and then you lose them, that is a hit to the bottom line. And I feel that we don't look at it enough as an economic problem. And in fact, it is. So this isn't just about being nice to people. This is about good business.
Yeah, good business sense. Because business owners, and this is quite apocryphal, but I've been told that a business that can run really, really well, like a franchise, once they change ownership, that same business can go downhill. Is that true?
It is absolutely true. And in fact, there's fascinating research that shows that most people will take a job because of the job. It's something that I want to be able to do, or I like the company, the environment. But the number one reason that most people leave a job is the boss. It's a relationship, which is really fascinating when you think about it. And just anecdotally, talking to people over the years, I would say that that's a lot of times the case. So here you've put so much effort into finding this right person, but then not managing them, you know, not focusing on that relationship. It's a terrible waste. And like I said, I think it's an economic issue.
Okay, and that seems to be glossed over by lots of corporations, not just small and medium-sized enterprises, but even large multinational corporations. And that becomes obvious when the HR department, human resources, has this revolving door of people coming in and leaving, which can you actually put in terms of, so that the bean counters can appreciate this, how many hundreds, thousands, or millions of dollars is lost just by this very small but significant point that is missed in a year, in a financial year?
Well, there are some studies that say that it's billions of dollars that companies are losing from turnover. There's an interesting book called Top Grading. The gentleman that wrote it, Bradford Smart, did a survey and quantified what is the cost of, he talked about it as a bad hire, but it would be, I bring someone in, it ends up not being the right person, and they leave within that 6 months to 2 years. And his research shows that it's anywhere from 8 times to 15 times to, in some cases, 27 times salary. So think about that. And especially you're talking about a small business, maybe there's 5 people. That is serious dollars that are being lost because the right person isn't coming in. We're not treating them well once they're there. And then we're losing them after having invested so much money in bringing them into our organization.
Okay, so do you actually sit down with, let's say, the head of the company and say, really, by and large, you're the problem?
That is the more challenging part of the work that we do. Oftentimes what we do is we do try to show people that are leading a firm a little bit more what I might call objectively the data. So we do a lot of work with behavioral styles, for example. So I might have someone that runs a company and they're very frustrated with one of their employees. And of course they want me to come in and they want me to fix the employee. And then I'll find that what the problem really is the boss. It may be the way the person is treating the employee or communicating with them. And it's just a mismatch, you know? So it's not all on the boss, but it's a mismatch. So we'll show them behavioral style. You know, maybe the boss is a very assertive, aggressive, you know, get it done fast kind of person. And this person they've hired in is more slow, more thoughtful, more methodical. They need time to think about things. So we do a lot of work trying to show people that this is where some of the differences lie. So it's not so much you're bad or you don't know what to do with this employee, but that we have these differences here. And then the same thing around values, motivators. You'll have a boss who maybe thinks ROI, you know, return on investment is critically important. And employees who feel like, no, it's all about how you treat us. So it's differences rather than someone's good and someone's bad.
All right. So like you say, the key word is mismatch. And so can you tell viewers here, let's say, who are business owners looking to hire now, and they are not the sole decision maker in the process of vetting potential candidates. What is it that you got to look for beyond the, you know, how some people will say, I just like the way they're dressed. And it's like, that is not the reason to hire a person, because first impressions, although they're important, do not tell the full story of how they're going to behave day in, day out within your organization. Yes?
Such an important point. And I will say again, when they study this, they see that many, many people make a hire based on something they can't even put their finger on. I just like that person. I felt good about that person. So a couple things to try to overcome that. One would be first to get very clear about what success looks like in this role. So especially with the small business people that you're talking to, I might decide I need someone in the firm, but I'm not really clear what do I need. I just know that I need another body around here. So I have to be clear, what will success look like? What do I want this person to do? What will be the requirements of this role? So the first step is me as the hiring person getting very, very clear what's important to my firm, what's important to me in making this choice. The second thing is making sure not only do I have a clear job written, but I'm also looking at those behavioral pieces that we just talked about. So if, for example, I need someone who's very data oriented, very good at quality control and crossing the T's and dotting the I's, making sure things are right, I probably want to bring in a sales type, right? So things like this.
So basically, I've been told too that people hire people just like them, when in fact it's somebody quite opposite that they require in that particular aspect, department of the business, to make it run. The boss might be really good as a people person and going out and shaking hands and building rapport, but they've got terrible, terrible track records with following up, getting contracts written and so forth. But the hiring is like, oh, that guy's just like me. We get on like a house on fire. I'm sure it'd be great. But like you say, it doesn't work that way, does it?
Well, it doesn't, except for maybe the role that you have is you need somebody that's like you. This is the part that's so difficult for so many people, is taking that step back and thinking about, what do I really need here? Sometimes I need, especially in a small business, I need to hire someone who's really my complement, right? They're different from me. They're doing all the things that I don't do. But look, in other cases, maybe I want to bring somebody in that I want to mentor and is going to be my successor. And in that case, maybe I do want somebody who's cut from the same mold that I am. So it's really challenging yourself to think about what do you really want and sticking to that and not getting influenced by, oh, you know, I know that I did all this work to figure out what the role was, what success looks like, what I need, but now this person came in and I just really like this guy or gal. I think I'm just going to go with that person. You know, you've got to make sure that you're holding yourself a little bit accountable in the interest of what's best for your business.
Okay, yeah, because some bosses can be literally loose cannons in their own organization, isn't it?
We see a lot of this. And unfortunately, again, I think that what's difficult is that they don't realize how much of it is backfiring on them. You know, a lot of times when I do have to give feedback, and I do to clients we might have, that, you know, some of what they're doing might be the problem. You know, I'll say to them, this is where I put on my card, Grim Reaper. You know, I have to come and give you feedback you're not going to want to hear. But I try to say to them, but this isn't about me telling you what you're doing wrong. This is about me really wanting to see this organization succeed. And in the interest of your success, there's some things I just would like you to think about that maybe we could do differently. And you know what? Most people who really do want the thing to turn around will listen to that. They may not like it. None of us like to get negative feedback about what we're doing. But when we get a chance to think about it and how it's impacting us, I find that good leaders and good managers do want to know and be given that opportunity to change.
Okay, you hit on something really interesting there, in the sense that it's they ultimately want the organization to succeed or be profitable. I mean, who doesn't? But they are in their own way, so to speak. So the name of my show is Money and Mindset, okay? And really it is about the mindset of the business owner or the person in charge that impacts negatively in this sense on the bottom line of a company. So when you see that, and you, like you say, you got to do the grim reaper thing and say, listen folks, this is not palatable, but it's necessary if your business is supposed to thrive. So how do you go about then bringing the attention to the business owner and saying, okay, tell me, what do you really feel about the business in a sense? Have you identified so much with it that any criticism of the business is a criticism of me?
So one of the things that I've learned to do over time, and we use in our business a lot, is something we call the shift model. And we trademarked this because we've used it so many times with so many people with great success. And it gets at one of the things that you're keying on here. So I just want to talk about one piece of it. But that is that there is a place to do what we call highlight the obstacles, but then categorize them. Because what I find, Lawan, is you have people who say, I don't want to hear the bad news. Don't bring me a problem. Just bring me the solution. And the problem is that there's a chokehold on their business as a result, because the problems need to come to light. They need to be dealt with. So we frame it to say, look, every business has obstacles. It can be the people. That's about the human factor, which we also talk about. But there's lots of things going on in the business. So instead of you as owner feeling like, gosh, you've got to take it all on and you've got to fix yourself and you've got to change, let's look at what those obstacles are and then categorize them. What can you control? What can you influence? And what's out of your control? And when you start to turn it, I just believe in bringing people more objective kind of data, because it is personal and it does feel like you're attacking me. And so to the degree we can say, okay, wait a minute, let's look at this more objectively, more fact-based, you'd be surprised at how people then will say, oh, okay, well, that I can deal with. So you're not asking me to change who I am. You're asking maybe to look at this a little bit differently. And people are able to do that.
And obviously, you've got a way with, tactfully of saying that. But there is a requirement for behavioral change, because like we were discussing off air beforehand, that some of these people might feel threatened because they're insecure about their own position, that they then treat their subordinates badly, not out of spite, but because out of fear for their own, and they become defensive about their own position. Is that right?
Without a doubt. And a lot of times, I think, and we talk about it as identifying the human factor, and that's another step in our process, because I do believe, and you want to talk about a money mindset, success mindset, all of these things, in many cases, we think it's everything else out there, but we're our own worst enemy. And so understanding my own motives, if I'm the boss or I'm the owner, or if I'm someone who works there, trying to get an understanding of, you know, what else could be going on with that boss? As they yell at me, could it be that it's this person really is insecure? And this is the way that this plays out with them. So I think we need to maybe adopt a little bit for ourselves and for others, kind of that learning of, you know, what's underneath. You know, in psychology, people will call it the presenting problem, right? You go into a psychologist and you say, I have this problem, this is what it is, and that's what you present. But 9.5 times out of 10, your problem is really rooted somewhere else, and that's how it manifests. I'm a hypnotherapist also. We see it in hypnosis too. You know, weight loss isn't usually about eating better. It's about something else, messages that someone has accumulated or an experience they've had. So same thing applies in business. It's, what else is going on underneath that we're not talking about? And you need to get that to the surface sometimes.
Yeah. And do you find that with male business owners, they're more defensive as opposed to female business owners? Or is there a 50-50 split between the two?
You know, I have to be really honest and say that in my experience, it doesn't cleanly divide along gender lines. I have had some of my more frustrating situations with women who are just clearly so much of the problem and not willing to see how it's playing out. And some men who have been so open and have embraced feedback and really have said, help me see, what do I need to do differently here? And then the opposites in both camps, men who are very resistant and women who've been... So I have to say, I do tend to work in an industry that's largely male-dominated, although we've worked with many, many women as well. And I can't find a gender component on that one, okay. Truth be told.
All right. It's nice to know that people are equally neurotic, male or female.
Exactly.
But now you touched on something very interesting too, that you need, the boss needs to have some degree of self-awareness. Now, if that's not a happening thing, it is the employee who's got to have that self-awareness. Like you said, you know, if he's yelling and looking, starting to look purple in the face because he's upset about something, it's not about me, it's just him playing something out. Now, as the employee, then what can you do in terms of giving somebody advice or helping them to stay on in the job despite having a boss that's a bit unreasonable?
One, this is something that if we can get this message out to people that are watching this, this is such a key thing, I think, where we want other people to change. And in the business realm, I want my boss to be a different person. And what we have full control over is we can change our reactions to people. We can change our actions, but we are very limited in our ability to actually change that other person. So if someone's listening and says, you know what, this boss is very difficult to deal with, so what choices do I have? So there's a couple of things I would say to think about. First of all, this idea of becoming a little bit more data-oriented, fact-oriented. Sometimes I call it being a detective or being an interested observer. So the boss comes in and starts to yell, and we tend to get triggered, right? It's the normal response. I hate it when this guy or this gal yells at me. I want to respond. If you can know that you get triggered and instead kind of take that, okay, here this person goes again. I wonder what goes on with this guy. Wow, why does he feel the need to yell like this? I wonder if he feels like this is useful. And you almost start to have this dialogue with yourself that you're observing what's happening instead of getting really sucked into it. It's so interesting because just that lack of response that you've always given that person can oftentimes be the thing that stops them in their tracks. So that's one thing. Another thing is to, I call it kind of making a different story up. So instead of the boss hates me, the boss is a jerk, the boss is always yelling at me, you could literally turn around to say, this person has a problem. Wow. Now, again, you're not saying this to the boss, of course, but in your mind, you know, I really need to have some empathy here. I wonder what that's about. And you're kind of looking at the person in a different way and trying to take the sting out of their behavior a little bit. Because the truth of the matter is, it is just a job. And my favorite saying, this too shall pass. And at some point, this person will be out of your life. So kind of figure out, what can you learn from it? Now, people listening will say, that's terrible. This person shouldn't be allowed to treat me this way, et cetera, et cetera. And Luan, to that I say, you know, you can continue to kind of have that resistance about it, but you're going to be miserable. So then you're kind of left with, well, you should just quit. But play with it for a little bit. Just see if you can approach the person differently. It's amazing how all of a sudden the emotion, the sting, will go out of the whole relationship.
All right, so we're just going to take a slight left turn here, and you're talking about the relationship, and the way I see relationships about, on an energetic level, it's about the giving and the taking. And so energetically, somebody's spitting out all this pretty negative energy, and you're saying within yourself as the employee, you have the capacity to just, in a sense, neutralize it or not create a bubble, so to speak, so that it doesn't affect you emotionally, that you can still go to work with that person. And funnily enough, your colleague next to you gets really upset with the whole thing because everybody gets yelled at, but you're okay with it. So what are the sorts of practices a person can adopt and integrate into their lives so that they can see their boss with compassion?
I love this. And I love the term that you use, the bubble, because that really is what's happening. You're not, that person is still ranting and raving. And truth be told, it may still be very unpleasant. But what you're trying to do is build a little bit of a shield so that your emotional response, the negativity that you may have given over to that person in the past, isn't fueling the whole thing. So then you're left both feeling like, ick, you know, what a terrible place this is to work. So there's one thing I love to say to people, and that is, you know, when you have someone like this, hey, let's say it could be a family member, right? But we're talking about the workplace, but this could be anywhere in life. You have someone and they always cause you pain, emotional pain. Well, first of all, you know that. Likely, it happens every time you deal with this person. So the boss, if he hasn't erupted in a while, in this scenario we have going here, he's likely to do it at some point. So what I have to do is I have to prepare, right? So a few different kinds of coping skills that I like to talk about. So first of all, we want to recognize the fact that we are triggered by the behavior. So we want to be prepared. Instead of stepping into the dance and responding to them the way we always have, we want to have another choice for when that trigger takes place. And that can be anything from, I've been practicing deep breathing, and so now this person is yelling, and while they're yelling, I am literally picturing, as we talk about in hypnosis, the blue balloon that fills up in my stomach as I breathe in, picture it as I breathe out. Now, the boss doesn't know I'm doing this, but my attention has gone to my breath. I am breathing here. Or we'll talk about creating other kinds of triggers. So maybe you have practiced, and it could be anything that works for you. It could be meditation. It could be going out for a walk. Whatever works for you that calms your body. You practice a trigger so that you in your mind are imagining that calm state for you. And it can be other things. So some people can say, I'm not good at something like that. When I'm in the moment, I'm frozen. Well, maybe then remove yourself. The boss is yelling and you say, you know, I'm so sorry, but I need to use the ladies' room. I'll be back in a minute. You know, right? Break the connect. Why don't we feel like we can do that?
Wow, that's
break
amazing.
Break the connection.
Yeah, rather than the deer in the headlights. By the way, Bev, we're being featured on Blog TV, so would you like